Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Priyanka Sahai and you are tuned into Setting Sail, our weekly podcast that dives through the changing landscape of the entrepreneurship ecosystem and the challenges within. Our today's guest on the show is a second-time entrepreneur, an investor, philosopher, and somebody who has an opinion for almost everything under the sun. He successfully sold off his first venture, FreeCharge, for a whopping $400 million to Snapdeal some 5 years ago and has come back to the entrepreneurship arena after a hiatus of 3 odd years. Hi, Kunal. Thank you so much for taking time out for us.
Thank you so much for having me, Priyanka.
Okay. FreeCharge was sold off in the year 2015.
Yes.
And your second venture, which is Cred, was launched in 2018. What kept you busy during these 3 years and what was the time like then?
I probably did a bunch of things. I was involved in investing in multiple startups. I have been an angel investor in probably, 30, 40, 50 companies. I've not kept track. I have also been associated with Y Combinator briefly, and I was also an advisor for Sequoia in India. I was also advisor to the board for Bennett Coleman Group, Times of India. I also took some time to read, do some online courses. I read a bunch of books, traveled. I guess it's important to decompress. A lot of times serial entrepreneurship is like being an athlete in many ways, where you kind of play an intense journey for 3, 4, 5 years and you need to take a break. Now, if you're not a serial entrepreneur, people go on to build companies for 20, 30 years, 50 years. And depending on what your method of decompression is, to me, those 3 years was my mostly study what India is. And I was actually quite surprised that most entrepreneurs, most investors did not know many, many things about India. And I was actually quite fascinated and shocked at the same time by just reading about so much data about India that most people had completely skipped.
Okay, that's interesting. But why finance for the second time? All we know, Kunal, you are a humanities student. What really, you know, brings you so close to money matters?
I managed to do humanities because I dropped out of doing science stream. And the reason I did humanities because that was the only lecture between 7 to 9 a.m. that I could do, and I could do a full-time job after that. Because I had to be financially independent from very early on. And humanities happened to be an accident. I don't think I was really motivated to do humanities. And I'm actually glad it happened. But I don't think I took a conscious decision to kind of do financial services, honestly. And I think we believe that we are actually working on a lifestyle company that happens to have a starting point in financial services. But the reason to do that was actually quite simple. In India, 50% of public market cap is directly or indirectly related to financial services. That's one. Number two, you have the kind of experience that helps you kind of build a good startup around this ecosystem. And the third, the biggest motivation for me was I was actually quite shocked at the financial literacy that the Indian consumers had. And this is not the mass customers. Even the top 2% of India had very, very low financial literacy. And I realized that a lot of times families have got wiped out. Many, many businesses have got shut down because just people fundamentally don't understand the basic concepts of money. And I realized that if the country has to grow, we will have to become good at our understanding of money. Otherwise, we will keep losing money constantly to things that we should not be losing money to. And to me, it felt like a good motivator. And to me, it made sense that everybody was busy going after this 500 million customers. But the 30, 40 million customers, which are the largest profit pools for all the financial services, were actually underserved. And they were not even being taken care of. Because the core concept of financial literacy was not there. I'll give you a small example. Long ago on social media, I did a survey where I asked somebody that if I give you 20 crores upfront or I give you 6 lakh rupees per month till you die, what will you choose? And 70-80% of people chose the second option. And to me, it was very shocking because the social media that follows me is not like, I'm not a Bollywood celebrity that follow people follow me. They're like usually entrepreneurs, startup employees, educated people, mostly engineers, mostly people who are doing their own companies. And I was shocked that everybody chose the wrong option. And to me, I realized that the financial literacy as a concept was never taught in our school. So we became good at math and terrible at financial literacy. And to me, it was a big enough motivator to go focused on that. I don't think it was conscious choice, but more around this internal motivation to really figure out a way. If we have to create prosperity in this country, we have to improve the relationship with money for most of Indians, especially the top 2%.
Are you planning to cater to only the 30 to 40 odd million, the cream of the layer, or is there more to it? Because conventionally, I would think that India remains to be price conscious market. People still are hesitant to seek debt. They still believe in mediums like saving schemes than, you know, investing as a purpose. So will your target remain to focus on the 30 to 40 odd million customers chunk who are sitting on top, or you plan to expand this whole customer base as well?
I think the biggest myth about India is about how our consumption works in this country. If I have to tell you that 80% of all Bollywood box office actually comes from 5 to 10 million customers, it will be shocking for you. But most people don't pay attention to this data because we assume that Salman Khan is watched by hundreds of millions of people. Maybe he is watched by hundreds of millions of people, but people who actually pay for that content is less than 10 million, right? And to me, that power of understanding data, I'll give you another example. 70-80% of all discretionary consumption of India is done by 30 million families. That's it. If you have to look at the per capita income, we are at probably at $2,000, give or take. But if you remove the top 30 million families, the per capita of the country drops to less than $800. And if you have to look at, let's say, retail deposits, let's say India has around $500 billion in bank deposits, either in saving account or FDs. And if I remove again the top 30 million accounts, the number would probably drop to as low as $50 to $100 billion. And another interesting fact for you to know that India has the lowest female participation of labor in Asia. Lower than Pakistan, lower than Bangladesh. Less than 10% of urban Indian women work. 95% of all loans in India are taken by only men. Credit cards, 92% of credit cards are owned by only men. And a lot of these factors are just completely ignored. To assume that India is, we need to build for hundreds of millions of customers. The question is, when there are 30, 40 million customers, if you have not built good products for them, why go and chase these 500 million customers, which currently don't even have money? You cannot build financial products for people who don't have money yet. We need to create jobs. If one gender is not working in urban India, less than 10% of urban Indian women work. If less than 10% of people are working, how will we create jobs? One basic fundamental concept of capitalism that is missed in India is that unless both the genders of a family work, we will not create 5 to 7 jobs. But let's say an educated person decides to become a homemaker, we are not going to allow 5 more jobs to be created because that person with a much higher qualification is doing work that could be done potentially by somebody with lower qualification. And I think these fundamental issues of India are missed, and therefore we get excited by the premise of 500 million customers, but it only makes for global companies who come to India to just collect MAU and DAU, monthly active users and daily active users. For example, YouTube probably has 500 million users in this country, but if you look at the ARPU they make, it would not be more than $2 per annum. I believe that it does not even probably cover the cost of hosting videos for YouTube. But a lot of times we do these things because it's romantic to talk about 500 million customers opportunity. But let's take an example of HDFC Bank and SBI Bank. SBI Bank probably has 400, 500 million customers, and HDFC probably has 30, 40 million retail customers. The market cap of HDFC is 3 times more than SBI. And that is the stark reality of India that most people are just ignoring and not looking at the actual data.
Okay, I mean, that's quite a bombardment of data, I must say, and some rather quite critical and interesting ones, which perhaps not many of us would have had prior knowledge of. Now, coming back to us talking this, whether or not it's going to be a mass product, which I completely understand, the focus as of now will remain on the crux, and going forward, perhaps you'll figure out a way out. But what I would also want to know is that how has most of this notion or the way it was consumed has changed in the post-pandemic scenario? In terms of growth, how have these metrics changed in the post-pandemic state in the country now?
I think pandemic has been extremely devastating for people who are not in the top 25, 35 million people, right? A lot of us have managed to retain our jobs. A lot of us have managed to retain our salaries. But many, many segments outside the 20, 30 million have had massive impact. Let's take an example of how often have we taken a cab in the last 4 months, 5 months? Probably less than few times or probably zero times. And there were millions and millions of drivers who were solely dependent on that income. Now, these jobs are seriously in threat right now till the pandemic kind of has some recovery. Second point to think about is that in at least in the affluent segment, we observed that earlier we had seen a drop of 50-60% on the spends. But actually, by July, August, we have seen full recovery. Actually, we are seeing more than the pandemic spends now in the affluent segment, the top 20, 30 million customers. Now, that is largely because they have shifted their spends from offline to online. They are buying 3 computers for their kids to learn online versus sending their kids to school before. They have upgraded their home infrastructure. They have probably bought more things to now be prepared to live 6-7 months in their homes. And this is a fundamental shift that you'll observe, that the affluent segment have just shifted their spends, but their consumption and income has remained the same. But for the rest of the segments, it's become quite tough, and it's going to be very, very hard for a long period of time till we see the markets opening up, right? We look at the amount of restaurant jobs that are gone, hospitality jobs, travel of any type, entertainment, cinemas. All of these are going to take a very long time to recover. And I don't know if there is such thing called as post-corona, because unless we get a vaccine, the virus is not going anywhere. And if the virus is not going anywhere, we are going to most likely be indoors. And at least the affluent segment is likely to stay indoors and do their work through these Zoom calls, and will continue to be in this place for a long time. So if I have to summarize, the affluent segment has managed to recover completely their spends. The rest of the segment is not doing as well, and it will take a long time for them to recover. And in terms of consumption, in terms of spends, in terms of incomes, the top 20, 30 million seem to be largely unaffected.
When you're talking about affluent customers, what is the monthly income that you're referring to?
Yeah. So if you look at the top 1 or 2% of India, I would say the cutoff of their income would be probably in the upwards of 8 to 10 lakh rupees per annum.
Okay.
That is where the top 2% is there. But again, there is 80-20 in that. So within that, there will be again 80-20. And India is not a well-distributed on income. So there is a lot of concentration on the top. So let's say the top 100,000 people would be earning maybe upwards of
8 to 10 lakh?
Above 8 to 10 lakh rupees, yes. That's the top 2% of India. A lot of us think that we are middle, but we are actually the 1% of India. That's the most fascinating thing about India, that most Indians think they are middle class, but they don't realize they're actually 1% of India.
Okay. All right. You know, coming a little back and talking about the business model of CRED, I recently read that you mentioned somewhere that now you're planning to monetize the product and think that the plan has started off at this point in time. So in the public domain, the figures are that you've raised around $150 million in fundraising, of course. And I remember quite vividly that one of the largest seed or I would say early stage round was raised by Cred. As we speak, what is the path for Cred going forward? Will it continue to be more like a cash heavy model, or would you look at a near time profitability? What is the scale that you're targeting?
Yeah. So I think, Priyanka, one of the common misunderstanding that I have seen Indian consumers or Indian media has had with internet companies is that they don't understand fundamentally that internet companies fundamentally first prioritize distribution and then prioritize monetization. The reason they do that, because internet businesses can afford to create large distribution first and then monetize later. But if you look at an example of Jio, a lot of times people did not ask this question, but for 2 years they gave free data to hundreds of millions of customers. And we know what happens after that, right? They created lots of business models on top of that. They managed to secure a large amount of funding after that. But they could afford to do a lot of these things from their own balance sheet. They did not have to raise a lot of money. But a lot of founders like us, which do not have the large balance sheet to support, we are not these conglomerates with a lot of capital. We have to start with distribution first through fundraising. And to us, a lot of these things come from a very simple fact that we are going for a large profitable business model in credit cards. So credit cards combined has probably, including the credit card and the credit card loans business, would be probably $3 to $4 billion of annual profit pool in India. And to us, if we are able to create large distribution, we currently already manage 12% of all credit card bill payments of this country. We believe that in the next 12 to 14 months, we'll probably get to the scale of 30 to 40%. We are going to be in a very good place to really attract customers and create a large distribution to be able to create many interesting products over here. And the reason we've done this is very simple, that if we can create any cross-sell or upsell of financial services, commerce products, everything that this audience is consuming, we are in a good place to be. And we started our monetization journey sometime at the start of pandemic, which is March, April. And it's been scaling quite well. We recently launched a credit line product. We launched a product where you can now pay your rent through credit card. We have also launched some initiatives with small merchants where we are doing a little bit of commerce on the platform. And I think these are very early positive signs. In the next 3 to 6 months, we'll have fairly robust growth trajectory as well as revenue trajectory in the company. In terms of profitability, the way to think about this, Priyanka, is that if you are going for the highest affluent segment and you are going for the highest consumption segment, as long as you're able to retain these customers and make them consume on the platform, revenue and profitability is something that can happen eventually. But at this point of time, the company is going to be solely focused on growing both revenue as well as scale of the company and prioritize profit once we have managed to get a significant market share of these customers.
And that is going to take a while now.
I hope it doesn't take that while, but but it's much harder to acquire affluent customers than masses by design.
Absolutely. Kunal, if I were to ask you, what are the mistakes made by conventional second-time entrepreneurs, and how do you plan to stay away from these mistakes? Because, you know, we've seen that a bunch of entrepreneurs who succeeded in the first half of this decade have actually now started to experiment with something or the other and, you know, setting their foot in this entrepreneurship ecosystem. But a lot of them tell me that the fact that they think they know is a big hindrance. And sometimes it pulls them back from experimenting with the same vigor that they would do when they were younger, when they would just not know anything and would want to experiment and give it all out. So according to you, what are the mistakes that possibly a second-time entrepreneur makes, and how can you overcome those mistakes?
It's a very good question, Priyanka. First of all, I have to tell you one interesting fact. If you look at the world and look at the tech unicorns across the world, you will notice that majority of them are second-time founders. And it's not an accident. It is the reason it has been like that is the amount of maturity and mistakes that one has made, maturity that one has got by making mistakes in the first time is automatically recovered in the second time. And therefore, it gives you a much more sharper focus. I believe a lot of times the first time entrepreneurs probably realize that they did not succeed because they did not experiment enough. And I think the second time around, they do a lot more experimentation. They are a lot more open to new ideas. I'll give you a small example of FreeCharge. When we exited the company, that month the company broke even. And we had a competition in Paytm who decided to not monetize for 2 years, even after our exit, and continue to build scale. So when I am asked the question on monetization, instead of worrying about how what will people think about monetization, I think about how much power distribution creates and how you should first prioritize that over monetization, right? And I think I would say mistake that monetizing too early does not allow you to create a market share for yourself, right? Number two is just largely focusing on multiple categories, right? Many internet businesses in India suddenly said, we'll do 25 things. But we all have to now realize that only when you focus on one or two things, we are likely to become extraordinary. Especially when we are fighting with global giants in the same country who will have way more capital to fight the same battle. So therefore, specialization is a lot more important than generalization in a country where capital is likely to be much more with companies who have horizontal capabilities. So CRED is focused on credit cards and only credit cards. Not because we cannot do UPI, not because we cannot do many other things. We are focused on credit cards because we fundamentally believe that focusing on one category is likely to create a better outcome for a company. The third thing I would say is that hiring well, right? Like constantly, many first-time founders have made a mistake of not focusing on the team quality and realizing it much later on when it's too late. At least at CRED, we have really, really focused on the quality of team. And quality of team is not going to come with quantity, right? So many, many internet companies in the past have made a mistake of having thousands and thousands of employees. But thousands of thousands of employees do not really create magic. In tech businesses, small amount of people create more value. So we have probably 200, 300 people for the scale of company that we are already. But the idea is very simple. Focus on higher quality hiring versus trying to just create volumes for the sake of it. If I have to go further and analyze the kind of mistakes many second-time founders have done is not realizing the potential of market. Founders are great when they pick good markets. Great founders with terrible markets will still create terrible outcome. Picking a good market opportunity is extremely important. I chose credit cards because it has $4 billion of profit pool. I'm not creating an imaginary situation over here of where will the profits come from, because we are going for a very established profit pool in the market, which is growing quite rapidly. Just to put things in perspective, when FreeCharge exited in 2015, India had only 18 million credit cards, spending $1.8 billion a month. Now we have 52 million credit cards, spending $8.1 billion a month. That is the difference that has happened in the last 5 years, right? And this is while we had UPI, this is while we had wallets, this is while we have the entire digital and demonetization, all of this put together. Another example is, if you notice one thing about second-time founders in India, they're all somehow going for the top 30, 40 million customers. And that is largely because they have all tried to go after hundreds of millions of customers and realized it's insanely hard to monetize people who do not have money. And therefore, a mistake we make comparing ourselves to China. One interesting fact for you, Priyanka, 90% of urban Chinese women work. And the per capita income of urban China is significantly higher. I was doing some math with somebody. For us to match Indonesia's per capita income, we will take 14 years. Forget about China.
Okay.
is Indonesia's current per capita income, not future per capita income. So I think India is going to be fundamentally different. India's affluence is concentrated in ability to communicate and write in English. So India's affluence is cut through by English as a core determining factor at this point of time.
Okay, fair enough. Now, Kunal, let me take you a few years back when you stepped down to make Alok Goyal the CEO of FreeChart. You were the founder. You let somebody from outside take over the charge when you thought he had a, perhaps he, it was better to give him the wheels and steer the company the way he wanted to. What do you think of that move after so many years now? And would you consider repeating that act, given that if such a scenario requires it, I mean, would you think of doing that once again for cred if need be?
I believe that, Priyanka, every decision in hindsight can be analyzed and brought to different conclusions. But to me, hiring a professional to run something better than you can will always be a decision that I will always keep in mind and keep that available for me whenever I want. Even when I had got Alok as a CEO, I did not disappear from the company. I was still there. I just did not have a designation in the company. I was just there, still building. It's just that allowing a CEO with the product and engineering experience was easier for me to take roadmap decisions and prioritization decisions that Alok could bring to the table. But now, after spending years in the ecosystem and having built so many products, now for me, it is naturally easy to kind of lead a company and take some good priority decisions and hire more and more and more higher quality talent than what I could do in FreeChart. Please understand that when a philosophy major tries to do a tech startup, even hiring two engineers was very hard for me because right. I was not from some IIT Delhi, IIT Bombay, where I could just call my alum and say, chalo, mere saath company shuru kar do, right? I had to convince, I still remember for many, many senior hires, I had to actually show them that we are this large by calling them to office and making them review our metrics real time because they would not believe that we were so large. When we sold FreeCharge, we were already a million transactions a day. And many people did not believe that number because that scale was not believable because at that time, Flipkart was probably doing 40,000 transactions a day. And we were already at a million transactions a day, right? So I think these scenarios are less concerning because now that you have some successful exit in the past, people believe in your vision and more talent is likely to join the company. And therefore, we are fundamentally blessed with that opportunity. And would I take a decision again to bring somebody to lead the company? Absolutely. I don't believe that titles define the outcome. As long as the founder is involved in the vision, as long as the founder is involved in the execution of the vision, it doesn't matter who do you bring to kind of bring what kind of decision. But I think as a founder, I have zero insecurity about trying to bring more leaders and better competent leaders. In fact, I fundamentally believe that my only job is to hire people who are smarter than me.
Okay, that's quite optimistic of you to say that. And on that note, Kunal, just one quick last question. If not cred, what would you be doing right now?
Oh, that's a very hard question. I guess I would have done another startup only. I dabbled with investments. I did not enjoy it as much. I like building things. And I think I would have probably built something in either education space or healthcare space or something or the other, largely focused on bigger categories or consumption categories of India.
All right, then on that note, Kunal, I would really like to thank you for taking time out for us. So that's all that you have for this episode of Setting Sail. Meanwhile, if you have any comments or queries, you can write down to us. Our email is mcpodcast@nw18.com. You can also follow us on Twitter with our user IDs @moneycontrolcom and @PriyankaSahai. Till then, for more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.